Week 6, which wraps up tonight with the Bills and the Titans. We had three more overtime games last night, including the Steelers beating the Seahawks in the Sunday night game. If you're watching that game, toward the end of the game, one of the Seahawks defensive linemen ended up being injured on the field, one of those where everybody from both teams gathers around. They had to bring out a backboard and a stretcher and stretchered him off the field. The good news after the game from Pete Carroll was that the player in question did have feeling in his extremities, etc. So that looked like a very, potentially a very, very, well, it still was a serious situation, but it appears to be good news. It was expected that the player actually was going to be able to travel back to Seattle with the team. So if you want an update on that, there you go. And for Steeler fans, very happy, as the announcer said, not a Mona Lisa, but a win is a win in the National Football League. They're all big. Steelers move to 3-3. Seahawks fall to 2-4. Of course, playing without Russell Wilson for the first time. He did not start a game since he became the starting quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks. All right, 9:13. Let's get to the phone lines, to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline in particular, and welcome our friend Duke Ellingson in to talk some football, both Red Blacks and NFL. How are you doing this morning, Duke?
Hey, JR. Hey, Simmer. How's it going with everybody?
Excellent. You know what, Duke? We're just fine. Let's start with Dallas, New England. It's your team. Taking on the Dallas Cowboys. It was an entertaining game, I got to say. I got no dog in that fight. In fact, I don't particularly like either dog. But what a terrific football game. What did you make of Dak Prescott's performance in particular?
Oh, you know what? He has been lights out really all year. You know, they came within a whisker, we know, of beating Tampa Bay in the first game of the season. Otherwise, they'd also be undefeated. So he's just been really, really good. I mean, completion percentage, making good decisions. You know, spreading the ball, I mean, all the things you want from a quarterback that you've paid millions and millions of dollars to perform. And you know what? I mean, let's face it, if Dallas could have figured out ways to finish drives and you know, not kind of shoot themselves in the foot, that game likely would have been over a lot earlier. And then all that said, New England just found a way to hang around. And boy, anybody saw the first play of overtime, if Nelson Aguilar catches that ball, I think he's still running. That likely would have been one play and done for the game. But you know what? Dallas just hung in there as well and overcame a lot of penalties, too. I mean, that's the thing with Dallas, right? I mean, they win, and at times they look unstoppable, and yet there's always those kind of questions lurking in the background on things like penalties and weird decisions and play calls and, you know, missing on a 4th-and-1, things like that. So, you know, they're never without entertainment value, are the Cowboys.
Dolphins lose to what we thought was the worst team in the NFL. I guess it's Detroit. Did you expect the Dolphins to be better than 1-5, Duke?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think everybody saw at the end of last year that this is a team that was playing really, really hard for their coach, and we're seeming to put together a foundation of, you know, sort of that New England style that Flores came from. And then Tua was going to take the next step. Of course, he got hurt early in the season, and they've just become a bit of a train wreck, too. And I'm not quite sure what's going on there, but I saw the very tail end of the game yesterday morning. But, they are not looking so hot. And when you lose to Jacksonville, by the way, they lost it. That's a real demoralizing loss.
When you think about, Duke, how hard it is to identify a franchise quarterback, and when you have the opportunity to draft one, and you looks like you may have drafted the wrong one. And not to say that Tua can't be a good player, but Justin Herbert is looking like a franchise quarterback, and they had the choice, right? They had the choice of one or the other, and they went with Tua, and how franchise-altering that potentially looks like it's going to be.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. It's the biggest piece of the puzzle in the NFL, and it can set a franchise back a number of years. I believe the Dolphins have traded away a draft pick as well as part of another deal. So
yes, Philadelphia has their pick. Thank you very much. Their first round pick next year.
Yes. That's who it was. Yeah. So I mean, they could be getting a second or third pick the way things are looking. So yeah, you know what? I mean, I know there's been so many rumors if he does ever play again, which I'm not sure will happen in the NFL with Deshaun Watson. Of course, that's been the place that's been rumored for him to land. And you know, obviously, if they could get that figured out, that would sort of save the day. But right now, yeah, they're really looking at it. To your point, it's not like everybody's giving up on Tua, but he just seems to me, again, limited in his throwing ability, decision-making. I don't think they fully trust him, and so it's definitely a work in progress there. But if that's a miss and a whiff on the Dolphins side, then that's going to be a real tough one to overcome.
Ravens smoked the Chargers 34-6. They're now 5-1. Are we giving them enough love?
You know what? I think that was the most impressive win of the day across the board. There, you know, there were a handful of them, including I think Arizona and Cleveland. But you know what? Baltimore. You just look at that team. You look at the injuries they had at the beginning of the season with the running back position. You know, all that went on there. And you know, you think about this too. They've played two really, really tough night games and that went to overtime, and then had to kind of bounce back and play the next weekend. And nothing seems to faze this team. And I mean, I was so impressed with. Not only the fact that they could put up 34 points the way they did, but when you hold that Charger offense to 6 points, that is a really impressive outing. So I think they are maybe quietly and maybe a bit unassuming, but I think they're as good as anybody in the AFC.
Talking football with Duke Ellington, there's only one team in the NFL with a better record than the teams with 5-1, and that's 6-0 Arizona.
Yeah.
Are they getting the love that they should be getting?
You know what? No, I don't think so. And I mean, I was every bit the doubter going into the season. And we talked about early in the year when they won a couple of games, kind of lucky. They, you know, they escaped, I think it was Minnesota, where they missed a field goal at the end. And yet, you know, you said, JR, every win's important in the NFL, and they're hard to come by. And these guys have won six straight. And I thought they were just, you think about what happened yesterday. They lose their head coach to the COVID protocol. They had another coach out. Chandler Jones didn't play. And they go into a pretty tough environment and not just win, but they really put their stamp on that game against Cleveland. It wasn't even close. And if it wasn't for that Hail Mary at the end of the first half, you know, that's like a 30-point loss at home by Cleveland. So, yeah, Arizona, absolutely, you know, full marks for 6-0.
Packers beat the Bears. Do you like the path of Justin Fields? Get in there, get the experience, or are you getting nervous?
No, you know what? I think it's the right move. There are some guys that, you know, you look at the supporting cast, he doesn't have a great one, but I think it's okay. And you needed to get him in and play and see what you've got with him, and I think that's the right move. And, you know, he hasn't looked, they've lost, you know, I think they're, what, 2-4 now, but they're not embarrassing themselves. Early in the year was a bit of a struggle, but they hung in there yesterday, and I think it's the right move.
So Kansas City beats Washington 31-13. There's been a lot of angst. Well, Andy Reid says, you know, way too many turnovers. There are more interceptions, I think two more for Patrick Mahomes yesterday. Yet KC's sitting there at 3-3. The division is kind of a little bit coming back to them. They're not out of it. The defense certainly is a work in progress. But are, in any way whatsoever, are you worried about the Kansas City offense and the number of turnovers, or do you consider this to be a bit of a blip on the radar?
Well, I think you have to be concerned about it. And I think I mentioned this last week there, maybe 2 weeks ago. It feels like Patrick Mahomes and that offense is they've kind of got so much cash in the bank in terms of what they've done in the last 3 or 4 years that they just feel like they can make any play, even when it's, you know, ludicrous, even when it shouldn't be made. And I thought the interception, the one that kind of went through Tyreek Hill's hands yesterday, not necessarily Mahomes' fault, but the second one where he drops the snap and, I mean, he looked like a rookie quarterback who'd never played in the NFL before, just throwing it up for grabs. And it was third down on the 20-yard line, you know, in a very close game. You had a field goal for sure, and you make a play like that. It's just inexcusable. So I don't know what's going on there, but we've talked about how kind of loose they are with the ball and how they feel. It feels to me like they're just playing like we can do whatever we want. If it doesn't work out, hey, you know, we're still the Kansas City Chiefs. And I don't know. I think you're right. At 3-3, they're certainly not out of it. But wow, they just got so much work to do. And winning in Washington or against Washington yesterday is no, you know, it's a pretty low bar to climb over. So I don't think they've solved any problems just by winning that game.
I won't ask you to break down every Washington football team's game so far. I'm guessing you're like most people, you haven't watched it. But are you maybe one of the most surprising performances so far this year? Maybe because I had them in my fantasy football. I drafted the Washington defense. Yep. I thought they would be absolutely lights out with a fantastic defensive line, and they have been just giving up bushels and bushels of points. Is there anything you've read or anything you've seen yourself that can lead you to explain why
No.
their defense has fallen off?
Absolutely not, and I agree with you 100%. That, to me, that's the biggest maybe not noticeable story that kind of under the headlines all year is exactly what you just said. They finished last year. I mean, they almost beat Tampa Bay with a rookie quarterback in the playoffs last year, primarily because of the defense. And they got in the playoffs because of that pass rush. And we all thought Chase Young was going to be, you know, the second coming of J.J. Watt or Lawrence Taylor or whatever. And they have not just been average. They've been really bad. I think Chase Young, if I'm not mistaken, maybe only has 2 sacks all season, something like that. So I don't know what's going on there, but that has been you know, yeah, to me, I thought they were going to be number one or top three defense in the NFL. They've been atrocious.
J.R. also has their quarterback in the fantasy, so that's really not
leading.
He must have drafted late to get Tyler Hennigan.
A bold prediction. Hey, I thought in the Bengals, finally going to finish ahead of Cleveland and Pittsburgh, and are they close to Baltimore, or you think a distant second at this point?
Well, I think there may be, and we're going to see, because they played each other on Sunday. That'll be actually, I think, one of the best games of the weekend. But, yeah, you know, maybe not quite there yet. But what I think everybody has been talking about, and rightly so, has been Joe Burrow and Lamar Chase and all of that. But their defense, I watched a chunk of that game yesterday, and their defense has really, really come a long way. And they play hard, and they can run the ball. And, yeah, I mean, I think they're and you know, you win a couple of games early in the types of games that that Bengals team usually loses. You get a bit of confidence. You certainly have a great faith in your quarterback as only a second-year player. But, yeah, they've come an awfully long way. And tell you what, they are in the mix certainly for a playoff spot, I think. And we're going to see how close they are to the Ravens next week.
There, folks, is if you wanted a reason to know why Duke Ellington is a guy you want to talk football with, I watched a good chunk of the Cincinnati-Detroit game yesterday that was 34-11. And was
so ulterior motives watching in the second half.
Gotcha. Okay.
Something about the total points.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm picking up what you're. All right. Let's let's end the NFL. I want to talk a little Red Blacks with you in just a second. Yeah. But the game tonight, Buffalo and Tennessee. The Bills are arguably right there with the best teams in the league. The Titans, after a real good year last year, they've had some injuries. The play seems to have fallen off for Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Do you still see them as a team that could kind of pull it together toward the second half of the season and still be a contender?
Well, they're in a good division, you know, for that, I think. But, yeah, they've been so uneven, and I'm not quite sure why. It seems like whenever they can get Derrick Henry rolling, makes such a big difference to that offense. Of course, it would with any offense that could have that kind of running back. But I think, you know, they're built for the type of game that could maybe handle Buffalo in terms of being able to run the ball a lot and really control the clock and keep Josh Allen and that offense off the field. So I don't expect that they can have enough in the arsenal to win, but I think they could keep it close just because of the style that they play.
Obviously, in the last week, the biggest news was John Gruden being fired. Not only thoughts on that and how much deeper it can go, Duke, but assuming we never see him again either on TV or on the sideline?
Mm. Yeah, you know what? Would not be surprised. I think what happened, and I'm not going to make all the social commentary that leave that for other people, but you know, those are the kinds of things that you just are become unemployable in a league with so much history and everything that goes around that, and it's just such a visible league, right? And I just think it's really hard for me to imagine anybody, whether it's on the broadcast side or coaching, that would ever touch him. And it's sad that he kind of didn't get that, and this thing came back to bite him. But no, I don't think we'll ever see him again.
All right, I want to ask you a couple of Red Blacks questions. We had Paul Appelese on the show earlier this morning. He confirmed that Taron Christian is going to be out for the rest of the year. That would look like a significant ankle injury that unfortunately he suffered coming in relief of Caleb Evans. I wanted to get your overall thoughts. We're now four games into Caleb Evans, and in the entire scheme of things, that's a very short amount of time. Yet, Duke, you got to make quick decisions on players in the CFL, and you got to kind of get a sense of are they players or not. So after four games, would you say that Caleb Evans is a for sure starting caliber Canadian Football League quarterback, a work in progress, or you're not quite sure that he's going to make it?
You know what? I think work in progress is fair. You know, we are quick to rush to judgment in football, and maybe more so in the Canadian Football League. And certainly when you're the hometown fan, you want to see production and progress so quickly. And it's really hard to judge when you think about that offensive line having, I think it was now 10 games in a row with a different lineup. And a lot of guys that never played in the league before have been asked to step in, and sometimes in different positions. And I think they had 9 or 10 sacks on Saturday. And that's what, so it's really hard to judge, but you do need to kind of get a sense of decision-making and mobility and arm strength and things like that. So I think he's got a lot of the tools. He obviously still makes a lot of big mistakes, and that interception right after the turnover, you know, in that game when it was still, you know, really in doubt, was to me the biggest mistake and an indicative of a rookie quarterback. So I think he's got some tools and got a chance to be a player, but I think it's too hard to evaluate truly with the talent level around him.
From the O-line to the skilled positions on offense, do you see a much carryover to next year, or is it a complete overhaul?
Well, I mean, I think the offensive line situation, it was a hard one to foresee just given the number of injuries. But, yeah, I don't think they found anybody yet that has been a bit of a revelation that they said, hey, this is a kid that we can, you know, really mold and maybe work with. So I think they've really got to reevaluate that, and certainly that's where they would have to spend if they're going to have some money to spend in free agency. If, you know, that's where you have to spend it, and maybe drafting as well. But no, that to me is the biggest problem on the offense. And yeah, the receiving position, they still don't have anybody that's ever been able to replace Brad Sinopoli as a good Canadian receiver. So I think they got some problems there. And overall, just skill position wise, they're just not as good as most teams in the league.
Paul Lapolis did confirm to us that, no surprise, that Duck Hodges is going to dress for the game in Hamilton on Saturday, but that Evans will start. And I'm not sure whether this is the coach trying to temper enthusiasm on the kind of the big free agent signing that came in the middle of the year. I don't get a sense of handstands over what they've seen, but as I said, maybe they just haven't seen a whole lot of them in practice and they're really rolling with Evans. What's your kind of feel and your reading of the tea leaves and what you see and what you hear that about Duck Hodges and the Ottawa Redblacks?
Well, I think we talked about this and we all agree that the fact that they signed a 3-year deal is very, very telling, that they really want to see this guy and they don't want it to be a one and done kind of deal. So I said this on Saturday before the game. I'd say it again. He needs to play. They need to see now what he can do. And I'm not suggesting he has to start on Saturday. And I know going to Hamilton's no easy task, but you know, he's been around and played in the NFL. They need to see him play. They need to see his grasp of the playbook. They need to be able to see how he handles himself. And there's no, I mean, I know everybody's going to say, well, they're still mathematically alive, but let's be realistic. This team is not capable of beating anybody in the CFL right now. So now is the time to find out, you know, can this guy play and can we go into training camp? And if they've got Evans and Duck Hodges as the 1-2 in some capacity, and that's what they're going to go with, they need to find that out in the next 4 weeks.
Duke Ellington played a lot of years in the Canadian Football League. I'm guessing, Duke, there was a year or two in which your team wasn't very good, maybe here in Ottawa. How hard?
Yeah, maybe all the years.
Yeah. How hard is it, though, on the rest of the players kind of throwing guys in who maybe aren't quite ready? You know, you want to win games. You're a player. You're an established player in the league. You want to win games, and it's kind of seen as the team is kind of doing tryouts, as it were, for next year. How hard is it for the existing players?
It is, you know, it is hard, but it's the reality. You put yourself in that situation late in the year where you're going nowhere and you need to, you know, and you have to understand the organization, especially at the quarterback position, needs to move forward and needs to have a plan. And right now, I don't think anybody could say with any certainty what's our plan at quarterback going into next year. So the players have put themselves in this position, so they aren't really wanting to complain about, you know, new guys coming in and taking somebody else's job.
All right, good stuff. Appreciate the insight as always. Look forward to chatting with you again next week.
All right, man. Have a great week.
All right. There's Duke Ellington in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. And again, if you missed Paul Lapolis, visit with us from earlier this morning. You can find it on our website at tsn1200.ca. But again, Caleb Evans will start in Hamilton on Saturday, but Duck Hodges will dress. No commitment to actually whether he'll see some playing time or not. All right, we'll take a break at 9:30, come back. We'll, again, revisit yesterday's Sens game. We'll get some thoughts on what to do with Timmy Stützle Thursday. Looks like a chuckle play. The coach has already said he's going right back in his spot where Stützle was playing on the first line. So what to make of Timmy Stützle? Dave Poulin had some ideas for us earlier this morning, but we'll get into that debate and much more when we return here on a Monday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Welcome back, 9:36. Still to come before 10 o'clock. We'll have our second code word of the day in our Sens Jersey Monday contest. We'll stand by for that. That's coming up. Simmer, what do you make of Thursday? Brady Tkachuk's going to play. Sounds like, according to the coach, he's going right back in his spot with Norris and Batherson. Coach loves Paul Pinto and Brown right now. That's their identity line. He likes the matchup, especially at home, he said, when he can get the matchups that he wants.
Yeah.
That leaves Tim Stützle right now on a bit of an island. You got the hot shooting, or at least goals going in off my body, Chris Tierney.
Yeah.
Is that what we're going to be left at with Tierney and Ennis? Is that the new combo?
I guess. They've wanted to play Sanford ahead of Formanton. I didn't know if you'd put Sanford. I'm guessing that's what it'll end up being, J.R. Stützle along with Tierney and Ennis. And Sanford slides down, I guess, with what? Kelly slides to the middle, Formanton on the other side. So, yeah. Also wonder with the usage of Formanton. I know they've said he'll never go down again, but if he continued to be a fourth-line player and not playing a whole lot, I think something to at least monitor. I'd have him playing ahead of Sanford personally.
Yeah, but back to Stützle. I mean, is that not parking your Ferrari? You know, this, again, is supposed to be a development year, putting your best young players in a position to succeed. And again, I'm not dismissing Chris Tierney. He's had a good start to the year, and he looks like he's skating and playing better than last year, early days. But Tim Stützle, you know, Dave Poulin said as much, should be playing on the top two lines.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I would. And I need, again, kind of identity line early on. Yeah, for Timmy Stützle. And Tierney has looked good, but I also kind of look at, I wouldn't have any issue with some chemistry. And first of all, Connor Brown, again, playing very well. JR, a little chemistry with Pinto and Stützle, kind of big picture, makes a whole lot of sense, right? So sooner you can get them together, the more reps you can get. And more importantly, and I just don't think Tierney can keep up with Stützle. I think that's a difficulty even for this year. So, yeah, I would have him with Pinto and Brown.
I got to say, Pinto, and again, he struggled in the draws yesterday against Jamie Benn, who was kind of cleaning him out in a lot of the big draws. He ends up only going, I think, 30% on the day. But regardless, a couple of things. First of all, he's out there centering that line in the last minute, protecting the lead. And that's not the first time we've seen that. So the coach has implicit trust in Shane Pinto in his first full year in the NHL. So that's absolutely fantastic. But you look at it going forward, if you think Pinto center, right shot, left shooting, Tim Stützle, left shot playing the left wing, that combination just seems like something you'd want to nurse and put together and see what you got there.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't even have a problem at some point trying Stützle on the off wing. And to Pinto, it is a strength, JR. And from what I've seen, very small sample size, and you can understand against Ben, and also three games in less than 4 days by the start time at 5 p.m. But right now, if you ask me who's the best Ottawa centerman, I'd have Pinto ahead of Norris. And that's a good thing. I don't mean even that. That's how impressed I've been with Pinto.
Yeah.
Physically, where he's at is a little ahead of Norris.
I think, writes Unsigned, I think Stützle and Batherson have really good chemistry. It would be a shame to separate them. That comes from Unsigned this morning. And again, we're three games in.
Yeah.
I think good players playing with good players, you often, you know, it's not often where you go, well, those guys can't play together, right? The good players will, put me with two good players, I'll find a way to make it work.
Yeah, and also, hey, I mean, I think there's a real link between Norris and Tkachuk. Batherson is there. I think if you put a guy like Connor Brown in, might be a lot of the same thing. So you're trying to find attributes, combinations, kind of things that complement each other. So there'll be lots of moving around. Then fast forward to Tkachuk, I'm assuming, on that power play with Stützle, Norris, Batherson, put Shabbat on the back end, and that should be a whole lot of fun. So the more reps they get, the touches and the looks, that'll be a chance for Stützle to put up some numbers.
I mean, Tierney got two power play goals yesterday. You say what you will. I mean, that it's about production at the end of the day. The first unit, though, of which he does not play on, I got to say that Josh Norris is getting a lot of looks with that, that one-timer from the faceoff dot. Hasn't been able. I mean, he got the goal, but that was more of a. Was that on the power play against Toronto on Saturday? I'm trying to remember now. Was that a power play goal or not? He ended up being in front by himself, made the nice little move on Campbell and put it between his legs. But regardless, they are getting the looks, which I think you would want. And it seems like, again, if you'd have Tkachuk in front of the net, big body presence, as they like to say.
Yeah.
That maybe a few of those that right now aren't going in potentially could.
Yeah,
so from a just getting the looks point of view, the power play, I think, has had a decent start.
Yeah, no, for sure. And again, I'm patient with guys that haven't played real games in 5 months, patient with young players, getting comfortable. What I haven't seen out of anybody, though, is they don't have much of a one-timer threat, right? And yesterday for Norris, I think he just got handcuffed a couple of times. I really like Norris's shot, but it's more about the snapshot, right, or the wrist shot where, you know, the one-timer hammer. We'll see how that kind of develops. But like I say, just keep getting them out there. I think Thomas Chabot looks very comfortable, obviously carrying the puck on a completely different level. And playing with Zub, we can see versus having to play with Zaitsev, that it's made a huge difference in his game.
Unsigned rises, just me, or has Tyler Ennis been one of the most effective sends so far this season?
No, for sure he has. You know, and again, a little bit at times activity over achievement, but he skates very well. He's a good pro, and for the way a guy like that skates, you always expect them to be pretty quick out of the gate, and really enjoys playing here in Ottawa, and the coach likes him.
You know what he is? He's nifty, and he's shifty.
Nice.
He's nifty and shifty.
I like it.
But not a lot of production so far.
Yeah.
Tkachuk, captaincy. Name the captain Thursday. I'll be in the stands. No, I already read that one. Sorry. They better name him captain. I bought a jersey at the game last night and had them put a C on it, hoping I don't have the only one in town. Besides, he's definitely the leader. That comes from Unsigned.
He is Unsigned. And as I said, lots of reasons. And I am not worried. Behind the scenes, you handle it properly. And like I said, for Thomas Chabot, he's not foolish. And I don't think he'd have any issue, JR. And if you're going to do it, I don't understand why there'd be any hesitation whatsoever. And before he plays another game with the Ottawa Senators, put the old C on there and you're off and running. As I said, I think this could really end up giving a nice push. And I think he's going to be very involved in the community and probably a lot of the marketing going forward.
Schmoberger, another reason Tkachuk will be named captain Thursday. He's playing against Carlson, the Sens' last captain. That's from Schmoberger. We've already discussed that.
Yeah.
Announced it this week and be done with it. That's from T-Box. Yeah. That one also shared by a lot of people.
Yeah.
Thoughts on Del Zotto last night, possibly doing alternating games between he and Brännström. I like Holden as a discount Mathot out there, and he knows his role, makes very simple plays. I don't think he's the guy to take out. That's from Parker.
Oh, they're not taking him out. And as far as recalls, Brännström's going to stay in the minors. Right now you have Mette. I'm going to keep an open mind, Jer. I still see a lot of issues with Del Zotto's gap control, overall pace, gets beat quite a bit. And quite simply, yesterday was not as tough as opponent as the Toronto Maple Leafs, who possessed the puck. And they had Mette and Zaitsev, and they struggled. But as I said, Mette right now is the seventh defenseman, and we'll see how that works out.
Ottawa is going to, you know, three straight home games. So DJ Smith is a big matchup guy. Not sure if he's as big a matchup on the defensive end, certainly at forward that he is, but... if he wants to match up his defensive duos, he's going to be able to do that in the next three games against the Sharks, the Rangers, and the Capitals.
Yeah, and also fun, JR, for us. I mean, watching Dallas, and I kind of look big picture and think, my God, you got Sagan another 6 years left, Ben another four. Klingberg is actually a free agent, unrestricted next summer. That program just isn't going anywhere. So to me, this is nice to Thursday have a little evaluation up close and personal with San Jose, then a chance to see the Rangers and Caps and get a little better feel than watching on TV, and at least for myself, didn't watch a ton of the U.S. teams last year.
Unsigned writes, I can tell you that I was a season ticket holder who didn't renew until I saw what they did in the offseason. I renewed yesterday. I think give it time, see what happens later this year. I think that speaks to the captaincy part of it.
I'm not trying to minimize. As I said, I think for this particular case, this is a great fit. This is your dream captain. He signed a 7-year contract. I just don't understand why you'd wait even another day. Get her going, like I said, because a lot of this is symbolic and face of the franchise. You want to sell some tickets. I have no idea why you would end up waiting a little longer.
Well, the results of our Tool and Equipment Store web poll question on this, when should the Sens name Brady Tkachuk captain, have remained pretty much the same. As it tends to do, once you see about the first 200 votes, the percentages don't change very much. Still, 66% say do it by Thursday versus the Sharks. 17% say, I like next month when they play Matthew. And the Flames are in town, as Hammer was saying. You'd have the whole family there for a big family celebratory deal.
Heck yeah.
On that. In the new year, gets 11% of the votes. 7% say, let's wait another season and do it next season. So let us know what you think at TSN1200.ca. Don't think they've already said they're not going to wait till next season. It is going to be this season. So it's just a matter of when. Will it be this week? Will it be next month? Or will it be next year?
Yeah. And the brother angle, personally, I think the family could come in and just celebrate Brady himself on Thursday if that's what you want to do. But hey, whatever you have planned. But as I said, for a team that wants to move a lot of inventory, JR, I just don't think it can come soon enough. And I hope this is a recreation of Alfie and that old school group that really got involved in the community, that really laid something very special. And I think Brady Tkachuk, first of all, is going to take the responsibility to do that, just like his dad did when he was in Winnipeg. And I think he's going to drag a lot of the younger players and recreate that whole Phillips, Alfie, Neil, Fisher, all the boys back in the day.
Interesting that Pierre Dorion was interviewed on the TSN broadcast, TV broadcast last night, and was asked by James Duthie at one point about Josh Norris's contract. And of course, Craig Oster, who is the agent for Brady Tkachuk, and the big, long, drawn-out contract negotiations with him. And then you got Josh Norris, also represented by Craig Oster. And Pierre Dorion says that Craig Oster actually phoned him on Friday. Yeah. Said, well, you haven't talked every day like we were for a while there.
Yeah.
What do you think about Josh Norris? Hint, 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 hint. And Dorion said, quote, we'll get to that contract negotiation at some point in time.
Yeah.
End quote. That's as wide open an answer as you can possibly
give. Yeah, but when you saw the little smile right there, though, that means to me they're going to get at it sooner than later. And as far as Craig Oster, you're not worried about that because the fees you've gotten from Brady, you've probably taken care of Christmas vacation, and you can't start collecting on Josh until next summer anyway.
That's right.
So that's a new deal. But my whole read on that, the way it was presented by Dorion, is that Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they tackle her, and I wouldn't be surprised. That would be a good poll question one day. What happens first, captaincy or Josh Norris' his contract extension? I bet it happens before the new year.
What would be the maximum number of guys that you would want to sign to long-term contracts? And let's say by long-term, I mean locked in for 5 years or more.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, and Pierre Dorion admitted as much in the Tkachuk thing, right? He goes, we're not going to be able to sign. We have got a lot of good young players. I think a lot of fans are kind of looking at it and go, okay, well, there's Pinto, and then there's, you know, and then Stützle, and then Norris, of course, and then Sanderson beyond that, and Formanton, and blah. Like, you can't lock yourself into too many long-term deals. First of all, budgetarily, I don't know that you can make it work.
Mm-hmm.
But B, you kind of lock yourself in at, and chances are that one or two of the guys may not quite reach the level that you think they will. Colin White is a great example of that. They made a long-term commitment to him. For whatever reason, it hasn't worked so far. And quite frankly, I think probably his time with the organization is going to be done at the end of this year, unfortunately, because of injury this year. What would be the max number of players you would want signed for 5 years or more?
You know what? I'm going to actually go to work on it tonight, Jared, because I want to actually look at the numbers for the guys. Because, yeah, I mean, for next year, I'll be honest with you, and I wouldn't say it's a poll question, but if Matt Murray doesn't bounce back, the combination of where Zaitsev is at for another 3 years, along with Colin White, you're allocated a whole lot of dough right there on three guys. Mix in another year of Delzato. When does that start to get in the way? So, yeah, I don't have the answer right now because I want to kind of go through and realistically, like off the top of my head, of course, it's Stützle, Tkachuk, Pinto, Norris, Batherson, that's five. Now all of a sudden on the back end, is it Sanderson?
You forgot
Shabbat. No, I've already got Shabbat and Sanderson on the back end.
Yeah.
Again, I'm a big Zub guy, but I also not saying it's crazy, but at 5 years, so I'm up to eight. But I'll have to really go through and do the numbers. Like realistically on an $80 million cap, what makes sense? But again, if you also want to win, it's not like you're going to get a bargain on these guys somewhere else.
No.
If it's my top six, if it's my top 3D and a top goaltender, well, I will have to work everything else around that. And that's where you do ship out players at the right time and keep your system up and running and keep guys coming through. That's the whole key to a cap system.
6-3-1, that's 10 players on 5-year-plus contracts. Man,
yeah,
that's a lot.
No, absolutely. Wow. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a delicate dance.
Is there a name there that you would avoid?
Well, you know what? That is a good discussion for tomorrow. I'd have to. Well, no, it's,
oh, no,
it's
but
true.
It is. Like,
Sanderson, absolutely. I'm a big believer. Shabbat, they're already locked in. And Tkachuk, they're locked in. And Batherson, I think 6 years was perfect. I think 6 years is perfect on Norris. So Pinto, where it's a little bit early. But again, looking like a real, real good young player. And then Stützle, of course, seems like he'd be a guy you'd want to go max years with. So I get it, but man, you get to 10, and that's where I think having the good young goalie come in that maybe is at the Vasilevsky salary level before it ballooned this past couple of years, right, where you're maybe saving a bit of money on a goalie, whoever that, whether it's Gustafsson, whether it's Sogard, I know you're a huge Sogard fan, whether you've got somebody where in a position where normally you'd pay a large amount of money that maybe you're getting a bit of a discount on because of where they're at in terms of their contract status. I think that's an important part, too.
Yeah, you also wonder for yourselves, if you start to look at Sanderson's situation, JR, do you avoid bringing him in for this year? I mean, it's a big part of having him come out, but do you want to bite off another year that quickly on a player like that, or do you say, hey, let's hold off and let's start spacing some of these out a little bit?
Yeah, but he would want that, right? And then you're getting into
exactly.
Dangerous territory where if you say, well, leave him in for his junior,
and he goes back for
his junior year, and then you're going, oh, then he's only got a year until he's in the UFA, so dangerous.
Yeah. No.
All right, 9:51, we'll take a break, come back with a final segment before we turn things over to the boys from In the Box, coming up after 10 on this Monday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
All right, welcome back. 9:56, our final segment with you. Baseball playoffs continue tonight at Fenway. It's game three of the ALCS as the Red Sox and Astros go at it, tied at one. Braves had another walk-off win last night, beat the Dodgers with a run in the ninth, 5-4. So Atlanta up 2-0 in that travel day today. They'll play game three tomorrow in Los Angeles. Speaking of baseball, we're going to go on our Wayback Machine and take you back 29 years ago to this day. October 18th, 1992. That would, of course, be, you're going, it's got to be the Blue Jays. Yes, it was. World Series, Game 2 versus Atlanta. They, of course, had lost Game 1. And in Game 2, they were down 4-3 in the top of the ninth inning. And Ed Sprague steps to the dish as a pinch hitter with a runner on.
Well hit to left field. To the wall, Deion Sanders. Home run, Ed Sprague! Off the bench with a pinch hit two-run homer off Jeff Reardon to give the Toronto Blue Jays a 5-4 lead.
And they, of course, would hold on from there to win that game. And that propelled them, of course, to a six-game World Series championship, their first ever. That game remembered, certainly, if you're old enough to remember that. You remember the Ed Sprague home run, but do you remember the other huge part of that game, Simmer?
Upside-down flag?
Upside-down flag. The Canadian flag, of course, for the anthem was hung upside down, and I was, I don't know if you guys have heard this before, I was actually living in Toronto, so I went to Game 3, which was the next game back in Toronto, and I have never heard a louder crowd than when the Canadian anthem was sung at that game. That caused a huge furor, I don't think it wasn't done intentionally. Yeah. We know that wasn't done intentionally, but a lot of people took it. Everybody's looking for a slight, right? We're looking for something, and man, did a lot of Canadians take that as a slight.
Man, did a lot of Americans not even care. And you do that, and Ian had brought that up, one of those underrated moments. Ed Sprague, and also a couple of cool people to be in a clip like that. Deion Sanders, the best two-sport athlete other than Bo Jackson, I guess, of our lifetime, and former Expo Jeff Reardon.
Yes,
right?
The bearded one.
Unfortunately, falling on some tough times, but that's a neat Blue Jays moment. And that was an old, dirty, what was that called again? Turner, or what was the park called there in Atlanta?
Was it Turner Field?
They've had so many stadiums.
I know,
there.
And that one there was like really dingy and bad.
One though came and went.
Yeah, they're onto a third one since then, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That one was, there was one built for the Olympic Games, I believe, right? That they use as the baseball stadium.
But what, the one, this one was named, it's named after one of the suburbs of Atlanta, and
I don't remember if that one was the original park, because the one they're onto a third park now. I know that there's a new one that opened within the last few years, but I don't remember. Was that the old park or is that the newer park?
This is the old park.
Yeah.
Bolton County Stadium.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So and after that, so think about that. They actually built a brand new baseball park, in part due to the Olympics, and they've already shuttered it, I believe, and built another new one after that.
And that dirty old park, is that where Hank Aaron ended up setting the record, right? And just there was magazines blown all over all the fans out on the field as well.
Yeah, what a bad sports town. All right, and with that, we'll put a wrap on the show. And thank you very much for listening and all the feedback today, both that which we got to and that which we did not. Always appreciate that part of your interaction with us. We're going to turn things over to the boys from In the Box coming up. It is Steve Lloyd, Graham Creech, and Kenny Walls to take you through the next 4 hours.